Let's roll, baby. Welcome in. It is yet another edition of East Coast Biased on the Ringer Gambling Show, of course, for our friends over at FanDuel TV, John Jastrzemski, Joe House, Raheem Palmer. The NBA Finals are set. We have quite the end to the Eastern Conference Finals. Thank heavens, I'm not going to have to hear about Derek White and being in the right place at the right time and this iconic Boston sports moment and this iconic 3-0 comeback. That all goes out the window when the Miami Heat go and win Game 7 and win Game 7 in convincing fashion, which now sets the stage for the Nuggets and the Heat Thursday night in the Mile High City. But Joe House, Raheem Palmer, as I welcome you guys in, House, I know Derek White didn't hit that third three, but you had a Heat and 7 ticket. Raheem was all over the unders. I told you about Duncan Robinson not having a big day, and I told you Miami was going to go and cover the number. I would say Game 7, a pretty profitable one for the East Coast Bias boys, just saying.
JJ, it worked out the way that the hoops gods intended, both for the us good guys right here, but also within the first minute of the game, really, because the Tatum ankle injury really set the stage for the way that, Game 7 played out. Jason Tatum only ended up with 13 shot attempts. He only ended up with 4 free throw attempts. And to me, his inability to, you know, create any kind of offensive threat, that really wiped it off. It showed that, Boston didn't have a plan B for either the Miami zone or anything happening to their main guys. But really, if we're going to be generous about it, that's true of you know, virtually every team. Teams aren't showing up in game sevens expecting their best guy to get dinged. And it wasn't a small injury. You know, he really couldn't move in the second half. Now, why they didn't use him at the free throw line to distribute, to try and you know, at least use him as a decoy against the zone, we can quibble about that. But, you know, the Celtics are who we thought they were. They showed themselves to be a team that was somewhat rudderless. And as soon as Tatum got dinged, we saw the absence of a captain. You know, nobody was captain of that ship for the entirety of the game. They kept throwing up these terrible threes. They were undisciplined on offense, and it affected their defense because Miami, once again, those role guys had looks that were clean looks because the way the ball moves on the Miami end, and they knocked them down, and that was the ball game. So good job by us, but good job by the hoops gods, Dream.
Yeah, I mean, really good job by the hoops guys. I mean, when you look at the fact that, you know, through the first quarter, it was just 22-15. I mean, this under was trading as low as about 186. So you never want to get too happy and start talking about a result too early. But it felt like we cashed this under in the first quarter. And even with, you know, a big scoring outburst in the second quarter, I mean, it wasn't even close to getting there. So we didn't have to sweat this the entire time. So, I mean, that was beautiful. But, I mean, the main thing, I mean, Miami's defense was absolutely incredible. I mean, they switched a series high 40 out of 58 pick and rolls in Game 7. Shout out to Kevin O'Connor for, you know, listening to this. He pulled these numbers from Second Spectrum. And they held the Celtics to just 0.69 points per play. So the Miami defense was there in a manner that I never even expected. And then you got to give it up to Caleb Martin. I mean, Caleb Martin, I mean, he didn't win series MVP, but, you know, let me break something down. They pretty much put Caleb Martin in the lineup for PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker last year in 7 games, 45 points. In 7 games this year, Caleb Martin, 135 points. So as good as PJ Tucker was in the Eastern Conference Finals last year defensively, that extra scoring outburst was huge for the Miami Heat.
No doubt about it, and filled the void left by Tyler Hero, who got hurt earlier this postseason, where you wondered where Miami's secondary scoring was going to come from, and Caleb Martin provided that. House, I can't believe he didn't win Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And look, I don't get wrapped up in Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I didn't bet it. I didn't have a dog in a fight. It's not like it's NBA Finals MVP. Like, this is like a new phenomenon, the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's one of those things that doesn't have the same sort of historical significance. But my goodness, you know, Jimmy Butler had some dud games in this series. Now, I know he played really well in Game 7 and he came alive in a big way. But man, Caleb Martin stepping up the way that he did, if I had a vote, he would have been my Eastern Conference Finals MVP, just saying.
He was definitely mine, and I bet if you asked the Miami Heat roster, if you went up and down that roster and asked them to pick their MVP, I bet they'd say Caleb Martin. The activity on both sides of the ball was the compelling thing to me. I mean, the number of rebounds and him, he's got a rebound intuition. He's flying in from the wings, from the corners. You know, he just was all over the court on both ends. And he shot lights out the entire series. I think he averaged, you know, near 20 points a game. But the more impressive thing to me is the three-point shooting percentage. I think he ended up around 46 or 47%. That's unstoppable. And Boston literally couldn't stop it. So he's my MVP. He was the difference maker in this series. Boston didn't have an answer for him in Game 1 and didn't have an answer for him all the way through to Game 7. And he's the biggest reason, from my perspective, that the Heat handled the business against the Celtics.
I got to push back on that a little bit. I mean,
good.
I mean, we forget about Jimmy Butler's Game 1, where he had 35, 7, 6, and 5. And then in Game 2, he followed that up with 27 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 steals. So those were two wins. And you got to remember, it's how you perform in the winning games that really matter. Now, Caleb Martin was incredible, but we don't want to look back at this like the same way we do Steph Curry's, you know, non-finals MVP when Andre Iguodala won it in 2015. Like, that was kind of a bad vote. And outside of that, we haven't seen voters deviate from the best player on the best team. I mean, as great as Caleb Martin was, if you take Jimmy Butler off this team, they have no chance in this series. So,
well, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. Listen, Jimmy Butler is the straw that stirs the drink. I disagree with the Iguodala MVP. I get your point, Raheem. Do the Warriors win the series if Steph Curry's not there? Does Miami win the series if Jimmy Butler's not there? Of course not. But like, I like the idea of really rewarding the role player that kind of plays out of their freaking minds for a good stretch of games and therefore ends up making a huge impact in the series. You know what I'm saying, dude? Like, that's always my feeling. And I know, listen, history, when you look at these great players, you want to see, oh, did they win finals MVP? Did they win this award? Did they win that award? Like, people hold that against Steph Curry, which is stupid. Like, there's no reason to hold that against him. He got off to a slow start in that particular NBA finals. And then, if you remember, he came alive and made enough plays. And, you know, the Warriors were a better team and they ended up winning the series. I go back to that series, though. Like, I remember Iguodala playing brilliantly on LeBron James. Like, I know LeBron had some monster games, but, like, that was important to me. I think we'll look back on this series and say, hey, yeah, Jimmy Butler was the best player hands down on the team. He won them games in Boston, no doubt about it. But Caleb Martin kind of pushed him over the top. Like, that. I guess it's beauty in the eyes of the beholder. I would have voted for Caleb Martin for what it's worth. I love Butler. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA. But how else I would have voted for Caleb Martin? I'm not going to lie.
I don't have any problem with Jimmy Butler winning it because when we look back and think about the entire run that the Miami Heat went on in the Eastern Conference in calendar year 2023, we're going to say it was Jimmy Butler. It was Jimmy Buckets. Yeah. We're going to say, and it'll be appropriate. And so recognizing his excellence throughout the playoffs in the form of an Eastern Conference Finals MVP, I'm not mad about it. I'm just saying, and this is always the fun thing about these MVP awards. What are the criteria? What are we measuring? Blah, blah, blah. Jimmy Butler is the reason that the Miami Heat are playing in the NBA Finals in 2023, and that's awesome, and he's awesome, so I'm down for
it. Yeah, it was interesting because I know a lot of people felt like Jamal Murray should have won the Western Conference Finals MVP, and Jokic got it. So it feels like, I mean, the criteria is basically you have to be the best player. So it'll be interesting to see if we deviate from that in years to come.
Well, we have a lot more discussion to come on what we will see with the Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets. But guys, one other aspect in this series that should not be overlooked here. And we talked about it at the beginning of the series, And you saw it again in Game 7. House, you hit on it with Boston and their inability to hit threes and the lack of adjustments that you saw from one Joe Mazzulla. Yes, Jimmy Butler is the main reason why the Miami Heat are going to the NBA Finals. But the presence of Eric Spoelstra and the coaching mismatch that we saw in this series was apparent, was obvious. Again, it ended up taking shape in Game 7. And listen, the Tatum injury, let's be clear about this. It compromised Boston. It did. But he still was on the floor. You're still at home. You lost three games at home on that parquet floor in Boston, Massachusetts. I don't want to hear the excuses from Celtic Nation. You got outcoached. You got outplayed. That's a narrative that's got to be talked about as well here. Spoelstra, who, yes, is probably right now going the best coach in the NBA. If not, he's in the top three. If you want to dissect my list, be my guest. But that was a major storyline in this series once again, House. Major coaching mismatch for Miami over Boston.
It was part of the diagnostic when we sat down at the beginning of this series and looked at the prices, the series prices. And it's why the Miami ticket, you know, was so fruitful. I bet Miami, I know I keep repeating myself, Miami to win the series. And I did, you know, a silly ticket on Miami to win in Game 7. But, you know, the coaching mismatch was a big part of why I thought that the way the market was set was, first of all, disrespectful to Miami, but also kind of mispriced. I mean, it was leveraging a version of the Celtics that really didn't exist. Like, the version of the Celtics that was the 85% implied probability favorite didn't exist in these playoffs. And we saw it against Atlanta, and we saw it against the Sixers, and they don't handle their business at home. And they're, like, finding their way. It is really, you know, this voyage that they're on with Joe Mazzulla. I mean, the fact that they won three straight games in this series against Miami probably saved his job. And, you know, they are now in this position where they have to figure something out because Jaylen Brown was atrocious. The single biggest impact of the Tatum injury was Brown with the ball in his hands. See, the problem with Tatum not being fully functional is he's a ball handler. He handles the ball for them. They don't really have a point guard. Marcus Smart's the point guard notionally, but Tatum brings the ball up a ton. Tatum initiates the offense a ton. Tatum coming from the wings, and all of that was replaced with Jaylen Brown, who ended up with 8 turnovers. And, man, if you sit down and go through that game, I think you could get to double digits pretty easy. I think he got a favorable home, you know, counting on the turnovers, but they have an issue. They have something, you know, they have an existential kind of crisis staring them in the face. What are they going to do with Jaylen Brown? He said it himself. He said he was terrible. He was. He could not muster through either his skill or his basketball IQ anything to combat what the Heat put on the Celtics defensively. And that was, you know, the single biggest difference in the game, I would say, Dream.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, you got to respect the fact that he owned it. I mean, you know, he had those 8 turnovers. I mean, he was just 8-for-23 from the field, but he owned it. And, you know, I mean, the Celtics are really in a tough position. I mean, I obviously would love to see, you know, Tatum and Brown continue their careers together, but they're in a position to where they're going to have to pay Jaylen Brown the supermax. And we don't even know if he wants to be in Boston in the first place. So Celtics going to have to make some hard choices this summer and, you know, maybe for the following year as well. So we'll see what happens.
They're in a very weird spot because, look, if you look at the last 5 or so years, they're in the conference finals a bunch. They get to an NBA finals. They've had plenty of successful regular seasons. But they're kind of now at a point now, House, where if they don't win it, nobody cares. Like, I hate to say it that way, but they have kind of plateaued where it's like, okay, we've seen you in the playoffs. We've seen you make deep playoff runs. But when are you going to get it done? When are you going to get over the hump? And they didn't adjust all year to when their three wasn't going down. They didn't have a plan B. Like, Mazzulla was asked about it after the game, and I thought he gave a lousy answer. I mean, I get geeked out by listening to a lot of these post games after a series ends. And Mazzulla was defiant, and I thought he was arrogant, and I thought he was stuck in his ways after hearing him saying, well, we got to hit more threes. Well, maybe you got to adjust. You know, maybe you got to have a little bit of a different game plan where if the threes aren't going, you got to do something a little bit different. Even if the analytics tell you otherwise, House, maybe you got to adjust a little bit. Just saying.
Well, the biggest thing is not all threes are the same. Like, you know, we now have advanced analytics that show us whether a three is contested or not, how close a defender was, the quality of the threes that Boston took in that game seven compared to the quality of the threes that Miami got. Miami's average, like, distance from defender on the threes that they took, I think was 7 feet was one of the metrics that I saw. Boston's three-pointers were bad. They were not in the context of an offense. They weren't coming after multiple guys touched the ball. They weren't open looks. But the bigger challenge for the Celtics is the upcoming impact of the collective bargaining agreement, the new collective bargaining agreement, which is going to make it hard for them to surround Brown and Tatum with other guys, and couple that with the fact that I think, you know, Al Horford's now officially Larry Holmes status dream, and they don't have a clean way of building up that front court. Robert Williams is a part-time player. He can't play, you know, 30 minutes a game over the course of a regular season. They have no size. They don't have an answer for that. And I don't know how you go into the free agent market and correct that with the new collective bargaining agreement restriction stream.
Yeah, I mean, it really puts them in a tough spot. I mean, Horford has been hanging on for a while, and he's had a great career. But, I mean, at some point, you know, you just get too old. And with Robert Williams, it's just him not being able to stay healthy, it just puts them in a bad spot. So it is looking like, you know, maybe they just have to trade Jaylen Brown and make that hard decision and go younger and get more pieces. So we'll really see what happens. But very disappointing end to the Boston Celtics season.
Well, listen, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I was downright giddy watching that game seven. I've made it very, very clear. I did not need another 3-0 Boston comeback in my life. And funny story, actually, my sister, who works for House of Highlights TNT, is covering Game 7, wanted to be in the building for the big event, as did a certain colleague of ours, our boss, the outstanding podfather, Bill Simmons. And they run into each other. Caroline, very happy to see Bill. And I guess Bill asked her who's going to win. And my sister had a little more chutzpah than I did. I said the Heat would cover. I didn't think they'd win the game outright. She goes, Heat are going to win. Well, they go and win almost by 30 points. And the end result, guys, I mean, seeing the podfather going fishing with his dad. Good job by the TNT guys on that. And then, Raheem, basically every GIF and meme over the last 24 hours has been our pal, the podfather, with this sad, woe is me face. I love it.
Oh, my God. That was absolutely amazing. I actually saw one where they actually slowed down House of Pain's music, similar to the soundtrack to Us, where they did the Lunas I Got Five on it, and they put it slow, and it was just like, it was just so spooky. It was just, I mean, absolutely hilarious. So, I mean, seeing Bill like that, I mean, I love him to death, but I'm not gonna lie, I laughed so much yesterday. And, you know, just as a Sixers fan who probably should have beat the Celtics, we had them on the ropes in game six. I was happy to see it, but I mean, honestly, this Celtics team is starting to look like the 90s Buffalo Bills or the early 2000s Eagles as a team who just can't get it done.
Wow. JJ, I will quibble with one thing. And I obviously enjoyed very much all of the Bill Simmons slander out there. It was wonderful. I mean, we all, you know, we live in this internet age. It's you know, any opportunity to celebrate at our buddy's expense a little bit is worth it. But there is a dramatic difference between the Boston Celtics potentially coming back and beating an 8-seed Heat, you know, handling their business the way that a prohibitive favorite was supposed to, and what the Red Sox did to the Yankees. I mean,
I understand.
It would have been 3-0 comeback in that comparison, but this Celtics team messed around all season long and put themselves in the position where one ankle turn was basically going to wreck their season, and they got that. The Hoops guys looked down like, nah, we're not going to have this. This is not going to be the 3-0 comeback. It ain't going to be these Boston Celtics. You know what I mean, JJ?
No, I totally get that. And listen, historical significance, you can't even put two and two together, even if the Celtics were able to go and pull this off, because you were talking about 86 years of history with the Yankees and the Red Sox. But fun little fact, before that 2004 series, the Red Sox were favored against the Yankees. They were. Now, listen, I thought the Red Sox going into that series were going to win. I thought they were the better team. When the Yankees beat the you-know-what out of them 19-8 after Game 3, was I getting my broom and my party and doing everything that we were doing back in New York City at the time? Yes, it was. So I'm glad I don't have to relive that now for another week or two. All right, when we come back, the Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets are playing in the NBA Finals. Here we go again with disrespect for the Miami Heat and the series price? I think so. We'll discuss that right after this. It's the Ringer Gambling Show, presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
So now that the matchup is set for the NBA Finals, we have an opening series price on FanDuel Sportsbook, and it is way higher than I thought it would be. And it's a beautiful feeling for me, I'm not going to lie, because I can sit back and enjoy this series. I got the Nuggets from the preseason at the beginning of the year. I got a future on them to win the title. I jumped in on the Heat during the Knicks series as a little bit of an emotional hedge, and that was fun to watch over the course of this Eastern Conference final, and I have the Heat at 15-1. So it's a nice position for me to be in, just saying, boys. But Raheem, as far as the price on this series, I feel like we got deja vu all over again with the Nuggets and with the Heat. And look, I think Denver is a better team. I think they're a more complete team. I heard Charles Barkley discussing how the lapses that you saw from the Boston Celtics, you're not going to get the same lapses from the Denver Nuggets. I think a lot of that is true. But after what I've seen from Miami in this postseason, they took down Giannis and the Bucks. They take down a tough Knicks team. They go after losing three straight games, going to the Boston Garden, and win a Game 7 basically by 30 points. The idea of basically making the Nuggets a 5-1 favorite in this series, I think is entirely overpriced, dude. That's the way I look at this price going into game one of the NBA Finals. I know the books are smarter than me. I know there are geniuses in there working on this sort of stuff. I think this price is dead wrong, dude. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the books are saying that the Nuggets have an 82% chance of winning this series, and I'm not buying that. And you look at this Miami Heat team, I mean, during the regular season, they had 8 games all regular season where they made 45% of their threes. They did it 4 times in the Boston series. And in the playoffs, they're the number one shooting three-point team. So it's just like this team is completely different. I mean, we thought that they would lose to the Bucks. I mean, many people thought that they would lose to the Knicks. People thought that they would lose to the Celtics. So it's tough to count this team out. And it does feel like this price is very steep. I just don't think they have an 82% chance of losing this series. I think it's closer to about, 60-70%. So I can't back the Miami Heat. I personally think the Nuggets are going to win this series. You guys know about my Game 7 trend. Teams that win Game 7 are just 36-50, 41% straight up in the following series since 1988. And we all know about the Game 1 trend. I mean, they're 33-53, 38%. So, and they don't have home court. I think the Nuggets, I mean, they're just absolutely dominant at home. They're 41-7 straight up at home in this regular season. And there's no scenario where I see the Miami Heat going into Denver with all that altitude, with, Tyler Herro still banged up, Kyle Lowry getting old, how much they have to rely on Jimmy Butler, that they're going to go in there and win 3 road games in Denver. I just don't see that happening. So I can see why the books are pricing this the way they are, but it is a little high.
Well, surprisingly, I think the books have it absolutely right. This is exactly the to me, the right price, because I think there is a material difference between the Denver Nuggets and every other team in the East. I don't think there's any comparison. As soon as the Freak got hurt, as soon as Giannis got hurt in you know, round one in that Milwaukee series and made that series a jump ball, that negated, to me, the only other team that was even in a potential caliber in class as the Denver Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are a different animal altogether. They've shown us that throughout these playoffs. They haven't lost at home in these playoffs. They've only lost three games in these playoffs. They have an identity. They know who they are. They defend the three extraordinarily well. They have a top 10 defense since January the 1st. They're the best offensive team by every metric in the playoffs, and were, you know, top three offense throughout the entire regular season. And I, you know, the matchup in itself is particularly challenging from Miami. Denver beats Miami's butt, and they've been beating their butt for years now. And Bam's numbers against the Joker are abominable. The Joker loves what he sees. He puts a, it's like a giant, it's when I see lobster coming to the table, this giant, and I get the bib and I tie it on myself. I don't want anybody touching the bib. I'll just tie it on myself. That's how excited I am when I see, this is the way I think the Joker looks at it. And some of the stuff that we're seeing in the preliminary sizing up that's coming from all quarters of NBA Twitter and all the sites and everything, I mean, the matchups are bad for Miami at every position. So much so that, you know, I think there's a scenario under which the Joker might be more of a distributor kind of role, and we'll get to this. But I think there's a little bit of a possibility of playing Jamal Murray as potential MVP in this series, because the Joker can collect his triple-doubles. They could be 10-10-10s, and they're going to win all those games and let Jamal Murray go off and get his 30-35 and just handle their business. I think that Denver is in a radically different class than anything that Miami has seen, and the home court advantage that Denver has is unmatched, and I just think they're going
to
roll.
House, you make a really great point. My fault to cut you off, JJ. House, you make a really great point about Jokic and Bam. I mean, Jokic is shooting 63% when guarded by Bam Adebayo the last two seasons, and he's shooting 68% against the Heat across the last two seasons in general. And then to add on to that, we all know the Miami Heat. They throw a zone out there, and it worked against the Boston Celtics. But guess who was the number one offense against the zone in the regular season and the playoffs? The Denver Nuggets. So the Heat are really in a tough spot. And we all know Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the league. Probably the best coach in the league. But I don't think there's anything that they can throw at this Denver Nuggets team they haven't already seen. We saw the Lakers and the Philadelphia 76ers, they go small by putting, you know, Rui Hachimura or P.J. Tucker on Jokic. Jokic still found a way to carve it up. We saw them press Jamal Murray. They still find a way to carve it up. Like, you got to look at a guy like Michael Porter Jr. I mean, this guy's 6'10". Who in the Miami Heat can guard this guy? They got a lot of smaller guys. So they're in a tough position having to guard Jokic. They're in a tough position having to guard Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. And we all know this Nuggets offense just is super balanced. I mean, they got guys who can hit the three. I mean, Jokic is just one of the best passers of all time. So it is a rough spot for Miami.
Listen, Miami is in a position where they're behind the eight ball. They had to go seven games. They got to go to Denver. They're not going to have their sea legs under them going into game one. And we'll discuss and dissect game one in a matter of moments. But I think we have to acknowledge here, fellas, this team is wired differently. They are. You can't tell me any other way. They have a lot of dog in them. They are not going to be intimidated by the stage. I don't think they're going to be intimidated by the Nuggets. Nuggets are more talented. Nuggets are probably going to find a way to win this series. I just don't buy for a minute that this is a four-game series where it's like, wow, Miami just can't. Miami, to me, is going to have a moment or two in this series with Butler, with Spoelstra and what he can do. Their guys can go off from three at any moment, at any time. And as dominant as Denver has been, and listen, I think Denver's winning the series. I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. I thought Denver was winning the championship going back to the start of the postseason. So that's how high I am on the Nuggets. But we've seen Miami playing a lot of these games. Denver, on the other hand, listen, all right, they had conference finals experience back in the bubble. This year they get through and make it to the NBA Finals, but they're not as postseason tested. They're not. And if you tell me Denver, as dominant as they've been at home, road not as good. Not as good. You know, those two games against the Lakers, they were in it. They lost two games to the Phoenix Suns. Remember game three, game four. I think this has like six-game series written all over it, House. That's kind of the way I see it. I think Denver will hold serve and win the first two games. I wouldn't be surprised if Miami is able to go and hold serve, whatever the case may be. But I do think this series will be more competitive than the betting price is indicating at minus 500. That's my two cents.
Eh, I mean, you said moment or two. That means 4-1 or 4-2. That's fine. 4-2 feels like a stretch. I've already bet 4-1. I've already bet Denver to win 4-1. I bet how many games will be in the series. I bet that, you know, five games. I have a tiny bit on six and a tiny bit on the sweep as well. But this looks like a 4-1 series to me. And, you know, I made the case. I just think Denver – it's not disrespectful to Miami to say that Denver's in a different class than anybody really in the entire NBA in a particularly brutal matchup for this Miami team after the seven-game series that they're coming off of.
The one thing I will say is that I don't think the West was particularly good. I mean, when you look at, you know, some of the matchups that Denver played, I mean, they played the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, nobody expected them to go far. They played the Phoenix Suns, who... I mean, they really lacked a lot of depth. And then they lost
They had two players.
Yeah, and they lost Chris Paul. And then the Los Angeles Lakers, to me, I don't think that they were as good as Arizona. So I think the best teams in the NBA came from the East. I think, you know, when you look at the fact that the Boston Celtics, had they made it through this series, they'd be favored against the Nuggets. And I think that was actually a favorable matchup for the Boston Celtics. Now, I mean, it sounds funny now because, I mean, this is a team that was down three games to nothing against the Heat, but that would have been a favorable matchup. I also think Philly might have been a good matchup for the Nuggets. That said, I mean, we all know the Nuggets are in a different class than the Heat, but I gotta put some respect on the Miami Heat. I think, you know, they're going to win one or two games in this series. I'm personally going to take the Denver Nuggets -1.5 on the series spread. I got to put some respect on the Miami Heat. I think they'll get at least two games, but I think, you know, the Nuggets will show that they should be able to win this in six.
House, let's save the VIG. Unless you're getting plus money on this. I'm seeing on FanDuel alternate series handicaps. Actually, no wonder why I'm making this bet, because Miami at +2.5 is at -144. So I'm really trying to con you here. I didn't realize it. But now that I bring it up, do we have a gentleman's wager, though, on 2.5 games? Because it sure seems like you're in the 4-5 game direction. I'm in the more lengthy series direction. I sense a gentleman wager.
Let's do it. I already owe you. I owe you a round of golf for the NCAA, some bad NCAA bet.
How about a dinner? How about a dinner?
A dinner
next
would be wonderful.
Next time I'm in D.C. with some Old Bay crabs or some lobster or something along the lines of that.
Yes. We'll get a nice Mid-Atlantic spread pulled together. We'll have crab cakes. Yeah, we'll get the whole thing lined up. Some of the delicious Virginia farm produce. JJ, I'll get the spread ready. But I'm not going to have to do that. I'm just going to come to New York and have you buy me a tremendous meal at Rao's or, you know, over at Lucali's, or we'll go and see our good friends.
Lucali right around the corner.
We'll go see
I just got to text Mark. That's all you got to do.
Our good friends at Peter Luger, right? I'm looking forward to it. The wager is on, my friend.
We have some options. All right, when we come back, we'll dive into game one of the NBA Finals, the Dream. Loves bringing up the trend of teams that play in a game seven and how they got to respond in the next series moving forward. But we'll also dive into maybe the scoring leader, the assist leader, all sorts of good stuff that you can find on FanDuel Sportsbook. Game one preview of the NBA Finals coming up next.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
All right, game one NBA Finals, monstrous number, Raheem. The Denver Nuggets are 9-point favorites. Fair to say that the books are factoring in the little game one trend that you just mentioned to us a few moments ago?
Yeah, I think they're not only factoring that in, it just feels like the market is just, you know, betting it up heavily. So I saw some 8.5s. I think it was 7.5 at one point. It's getting bet up to a point where, I mean, I can't touch the Miami Heat. I'm just going to try to find the best number I can on the Denver Nuggets and take it from there.
I'm in the same boat. I got them at 8 last night. I was waiting for the books to pop open. I never saw 7.5. I would have pounded that. But I got in at 8, and then I gave myself 15 minutes, and I got in right again at 8. I mean, it was just it's too much. The situation for – now, there's a different stat that you have, Dream, for teams coming off a Game 7 and into a Game 1 that's different from teams that have played all the way into a Game 7, won that series, and then – what the series outcome will be. So you shared with us the series outcome. The team that won the 7-game series only comes and wins the next series 41% of the time. But I think the game one trend is even worse. Like a team coming off of a game seven into a game one, it's dire circumstances.
Yeah, it's
for 33, that team, right?
It's 33-53. That's 38.3%. And then if you want to get even deeper and you want to talk about teams who have a rest advantage, when you look at teams who had a rest advantage, at least a 5-day rest advantage, I think they're 10-6. But then when you look at teams who have a rest advantage and are at home, they're 8-1 in the NBA Finals. And the only loss for a team who had a 5-day rest advantage and was at home was the Utah Jazz against the Last Dance Chicago Bulls in 1998.
Okay. My one counter, and I know a lot of the data and a lot of the statistics out there are going to point against the Heat, not only for the series, but for game one. But House, the Denver Nuggets have not played a basketball game in quite a while. And that's a team that had great rhythm. They had great cohesion. They were firing on all cylinders in that Lakers series. And I'm sorry, it's not the same. You got a Heat team that, yes, might be winded, might be out of gas, altitude, all of that is a factor. But they're in game shape. They've been playing a lot of basketball. They're in rhythm. They feel like, all right, we're going to go into this series and just continue what we did against Boston. Is there any fear factor with Denver not playing now for about a week and a half? That was a long layoff for them.
JJ, that's what the first quarter is for. And I think, you know, to the extent that we see any sluggishness at all, it will be in the first quarter. It will be Denver getting back up to game speed. And if I see anything that I don't like over the course of that first quarter, then I'll just live bet. You know, there'll be a spread that will be juicy. We'll just live bet right out of the position. If I'm worried about the eight points that I'm laying, just live bet the Nuggets. That'll be fun. I actually hope that Miami comes out and beats their ass in the first quarter so I can live bet the Nuggets on the money line and double down on the whole thing. That would be marvelous.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like live betting. I mean, and this would be the perfect opportunity if, you know, Miami came out and, you know, won the first quarter. You know, it's so funny. NBA TV is actually showing the 2001 Sixers documentary. And I kind of had a vision, you know, what if Miami came out and stole game one and we can get a better price on the Nuggets. But I can't bet on that happening with the way, you know, the Nuggets play at home.
I'm kind of hoping that happens because right now the way my tickets stack up, I got a 15-1 ticket on the Heat. I don't have as juicy a price on the Nuggets. I think I have either 8-1 or 10-1, which is fine. But I'm like, man, if I could get a Miami game one win, to your point, Raheem, then I'm going to get a nice split the baby number that is ideal, that is perfect, you name it. I'm going to surprise you guys here, though. I think Miami's covering game one.
Mm.
I'm taking them right now. I think that it's getting a little too overpriced for my liking. I think Denver is going to be rusty. And I think we saw it in game one of the Lakers series. Remember, Denver was dominating. They were up big. Then all of a sudden, they let the Lakers right back into the game, and the Lakers were right in that game till a bitter end. It ended up being like, I think it was a 5.5 or a 6-point spread. I remember losing a heartbreaker. I was not happy because I had the Nuggets in game one. But I think we're going to have a competitive game one right out of the gate. That's my 2 cents. I think Miami is in the game. Denver wins. I'll say it's like a 3-4-point game, give or take.
That's fine. I'm not mad at it. I mean, you have to give recognition to the fact that Miami is number one in these playoffs in scoring points off of turnovers. And the Boston Celtics were absolutely down to be accomplices for that. God, they turned the ball over. And the turnovers were so bad. That's a big part of why Miami handled Boston. Denver does not turn the ball over very much. They have the third fewest turnovers of any team in the playoffs. But having said all that, game one, the rust that you're talking about, JJ, that's where you might not be firing on all engines. And also that perimeter defense, you know, it's been a strength of Denver all season long, is guarding the three. Maybe that doesn't, you know, match up 100% in game one, you know, because they're just practicing against each other. They're so sick of playing against each other. The excitement of finally getting into it, maybe so, but I stand by the Nuggets minus the 8, and I also will be very much looking forward to live betting if Nuggets go down at all early in this game.
So coming up, boys, we're going to have a look at the MVP market. FanDuel also has who can be the leading scorer in the NBA Finals. You can bet on that. They have who's going to hit the most threes. You're not going to want to get involved with rebounds and assists. Total waste of time, because I think we know there's a certain center who plays for the Nuggets who's going to win both of those. And trust me, you don't want to get involved in anybody else. But FanDuel and The Ringer, they got an NBA Finals Specials contest. Super cool. Users, they get a boost token. You can apply to any Ringer special listed for the NBA Finals. You got our picks and our SGP that we're going to have coming up for game one. The Podfather is going to have a bunch of stuff. You want to check what Bill's got going on, the other Ringer staff, whatever that Motley crew puts together. It's all going to be up on the FanDuel website, and it's good stuff. Listen, FanDuel, Ringer, Synergy, it's all beautiful. But when we come back, we'll have a look at that MVP market. We'll have a look at the specials that are coming your way. That's next. All right, look, boys, you can't bet assists and you can't bet rebounds because Jokic is minus 2 zillion. That's basically what it boils down to. So don't even waste your time unless you're looking for a lottery ticket, be my guess. But Raheem, scoring leader, Jokic, plus 110. Jimmy Butler is plus 170. Jamal Murray is at plus 260. Any interest there?
This is tough for me just because when I look at the Nuggets, I think they're just such a balanced scoring team. So, anybody could score on any given night. You know, like, it wouldn't surprise me if Michael Porter Jr. just had a monster series because I don't think they have anybody to defend him. Obviously, Jokic is the favorite for a reason. But if I had to go with somebody, I probably would go with Jimmy Butler because they're going to need him to, you know, really match point for point.
JJ, my favorite name amongst that list, and I actually have already dabbled in the MVP market, is Jamal Murray. It's Jamal Murray. Okay. And the reason it's Jamal Murray is because Denver, by design, lets him have the ultimate green light. And, you know, we saw it a couple times against the Lakers. He can shoot terrible for three quarters and then come out and have an 18-point or 20-point fourth quarter and take, you know, a 15-point game where he's, you know, got 15 through three quarters, 5 points a quarter. And then it's all of a sudden a 30 to 35-point game for Jamal Murray because he has that ultimate green light, because Denver has, as its offensive identity at its core, a tremendous green light for Jamal Murray, this version of Jamal Murray, playoff Jamal Murray. And it's the same reason that I bet him for MVP at double-digit odds. I think I got him at 14-1. I think it's available right now on FanDuel at around 12-1 or so.
But that's a nice number.
I like double-digit odds on Jamal Murray because Miami will not really have an answer for Joker, but he doesn't need to score for Denver to be successful. He just needs to do what he's been doing all season long. He's the ultimate distributor, the unmatched distributor, the combination of rebounds, putbacks that he'll get. he guesses the ball at the free throw line, immediately swings it to the open guy every single time, never makes a mistake in that respect. I think all of that makes it worth, just on the odds basis, you know, a little speculation in the Jamal Murray market.
Okay, so you mentioned Jamal Murray, and I like those odds for Finals MVP. They are juicy. They are enticing. Most threes made. He's the favorite at minus 145. Michael Porter's at plus 240. Gabe Vincent, 12-1. Caleb Martin, 13-1. Max Strus, 20-1. Is there any way, Raheem, somebody other than Jamal Murray hits the most amount of threes in this series? Any shot?
Yeah, I think you got to go with, you know, honestly, I really like Michael Porter Jr. I just don't think that they have anybody to defend him in this series. I really don't. But, I mean, like Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, Max Strus, I mean, those guys are kind of wild cards. I mean, like on any given night, any one of them can go off. So, I mean, and then also you got to remember, Tyler Hero might come back for the series. So,
See, that's my problem with any of those Heat guys, Raheem. And House, that's why I won't get as juicy as like Strus and Vincent might be. It seems like with the Heat, it's like a different guy every night that steps up. So, like, and if Hero comes back, that throws another monkey wrench into things. I'm out on the Heat guys. I like Porter Jr. as well.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I would have bet Caleb Martin. I absolutely adore that number for him. What was it? In double digits, right?
Double digits for sure. I think 12 or 13 to 1. I'm gonna
yes, 13 he's to 1. On a heater. Yes. He's on such a heater. He's got that tremendous confidence right now. Every look he gets, he feels like he's going to make, and their offense produces great looks for him in particular. But the Hero wild card just pours water all over every single Heat option there. So I'll just join you boys on MPJ. I'm fine with that.
When we come back, we'll have some quick hits from the boys. Raheem's basketball team's got a new head coach. House, we got a golf tournament to bet. We'll wrap it up. East Coast Bias coming up next. So before we say goodbye, Raheem, you have a new basketball coach, and I think you nailed it. I think you got the best coach on the market. He's an NBA champion with the Toronto Raptors. Beat the Sixers on that Kawhi Leonard shot a couple of years ago. Nick Nurse going to be the guy to get you to the promised land? How do we feel about that?
I have mixed feelings on it. I think the jury is still out on Nick Nurse. I think he is a good coach, and I think, you know, we obviously hired him just because of his connection with Daryl Morey. But the thing I'm concerned about with Nick Nurse is that he plays his guys heavy minutes. And we all know Joel Embiid, he is injury prone. And he's a guy who you need to load manage as much as possible. He didn't do that with the Toronto guys. And if we bring back James Harden is at the tail end of his prime. And he also needs to be load managed as well. So I'm not sure if Nick Nurse is the guy who's going to do that. He's very similar to Tom Thibodeau. And that he just, you know, he plays his guys heavy minutes. So that scares me. I do think he's a solid coach. And I think he makes a ton of adjustments. He's known for his junk defenses. He'll throw a boxing one out there. He'll throw a zone out there. So unlike, you know, Doc Glenn Rivers, he's going to throw some adjustments out there. So I do like that about him. But I think ultimately, without any roster moves, getting rid of Tobias Harris, upgrading the bench, the Sixers are going to be the same place where they were last year.
Well, I'm hopeful that you guys decide to blow it up. And then all of a sudden, Joel Embiid is on the market for the New York Knicks. But that's not a problem.
JJ, how dare you.
I'm trying to dare to dream a little bit. I will say, this morning,
I want to weigh in on Nick Nurse. I honestly think it could be a lot of glass half full because he's never had a center like Joel Embiid. He's never had a distributor like James Harden. And there are some guys on that Sixers roster that do match up favorably with what he had in Toronto in terms of playing a pushed out perimeter defense and trying to grab offensive rebounds and score that way. So it's going to be an exciting experiment. Quick shout out to my Washington Wizards franchise. We have a president of basketball, Michael Winger, very well respected. All of the NBA hoop heads are sending me congratulations. It remains to be seen here in DC, JJ, but I'm excited to have something to look forward to. You know what I mean?
Listen, you totally take it, and you'll see if maybe you could get your Wizards franchise turned around. You've been too irrelevant for too long, my man. Real quick, House. Good golf tournament this week. Jack's tournament. A lot of the stars out. You see a heavy hitter winning this thing? What's your gut feel on the Memorial?
I'm just a tiny bit down. I'm looking for value. This golf course is a long par 72, and there are some correlations to other Jack Nicklaus designs. most notably down in Florida, the Honda Nationals. So some names that I'm looking at, Shane Lowry is available at a good price. Tyrrell Hatton is right there at 25-1. Victor Hovland, who we've seen now in their first two majors of the year, available at 18-1. Lowry, 55-1 to win. So you're looking at nice prices on top 20 and top 10 for all three of those guys. That's the way I would lean for this tournament. But another designated tournament, so all the heavy hitters are out. $20 million in the pot. That is not chump change, JJ.
You ain't kidding. I might ride you there with Shane Lowry. And what I'm thinking about here, one Rory McIlroy, 14-1 to go and win Jack's tournament. You don't normally get Rory at 14-1. So juicy price there. I don't think he'll end up winning a major. That is something we'll consider. And maybe that'll be a little dabble for us, taking us into the weekend. Good job by the boys. Raheem Palmer, Joe House, John Jastrzemski signing off. Want to thank the War Gone Warrior. As always, we will be back Friday on the Ringer Gambling Show. Recap game one of the NBA Finals. Raheem will have all sorts of stuff with the 100 coming up over the next few days. And we'll be back next week on FanDuel TV. Boys are out. Be good, everybody.